tonight on the road to Shambhala. Yeah, baby, we are out of love, sending out signals over here at NH Unscripted. I am your three dog like night like host, Ray Dudley. We are coming to you from the F Troop like digs of the WKXL studios in Concord, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM. And for you beautiful, beautiful, beautiful souls in Manchester, 101.9 down there. We have a URL. Of course, we have a URL. It's 2024, nhtalkradio.com. I'll give you some more specifics about what goes on out there. I need to thank my sponsor, Lakes Region Fence. Matt and the folks up there in Guilford at Lakes Region Fence, LRFence.com is their URL. You know, Easter's coming up. You might want to think about getting rid of the peeps and the little chocolate eggs and everything and throw the money down on a brand new fence. Your neighbors are complaining. They hate looking out their windows. They'd like to put their shades up. Dump that thing you're calling a fence. Go out there to LRFence.com. Take a look at what they've got. They have reams and reams and reams and reams of pictures of beautiful work they have done. Get your squeeze a little close to you. Go out there for Easter and spend hours looking at all of the fence porn that they have out there. Yes, I used that word. I did indeed. LRFence.com. We love you guys, Matt. Thank you so much for all you do and for sponsoring our show. So, you folks know that I am into the entertainment business, and we tend to highlight a lot of the entertainment industry, but I have another love, and it happens to be permaculture. And for those of you whose eyes just rolled back in your heads, hang tight. I promise you, we got a good one. In studio with me this morning is Ethan and Amy Sager. Is that how you pronounce your last name?
That's yep. Right.
From Again and Again Farmstead in Tamworth?
That's right.
That's right.
Bingo! The old man's got it. All right. We are talking permaculture today. Introduce yourselves. Tell me a little bit about the farmstead, and then we are going to peel this onion.
Wow. You want to get started, Ethan?
Sure, yeah. We've started a farmstead in Tamworth, New Hampshire, back in 2019. And since then, we've been doing our best to create a healthy ecosystem that, you know, has a net contribution to the community. And you know, it gets better and better every year, you know, as the soil improves and the life grows and more biodiversity, more resources, more fruit, more food comes out of this place all the time. And, you know, it's a lovely place to learn from nature as well as to contribute to nature. And it's been quite a journey since.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we basically carved it out of a forest, our property. So yeah, we've been.
Okay, before we go too far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do either of you, or are either of you, the person who handles your website?
We both do.
Yeah.
I want to say it is filled with respect and love for all that goes on out there. It's really, you can tell you didn't just copy and paste something and throw it out there. Every single page I went to that either talked about the animals or the vermiculture, you know, and all of that that's out there, somebody imbued it with deep respect for what's happening out there. It's really impressive to go through your website.
I appreciate
that. Thank you.
Speaking of that, why don't you throw it out there and give us the URL?
Abeaganfarmstead.com.
Oh, that's pretty easy.
Yeah.
So you said you started this in 2019. Why? What? How did you even get involved with permaculture? And while we're on it, sure. For those people who have no idea what permaculture is, why don't you give us a quick overview, a definition, and tell us why you care?
Sure. Permaculture is a design science that is ethics-based. So it's a system that you can use to work with nature to grow food and resources in perpetuity in a sustainable way that's a net contributor. You know, it's regenerative and not just sustainable is the goal. And, you know, it's
based on three ethics.
Yeah, the three ethics are key to understanding permaculture and how it can benefit you.
And those three ethics are?
Earth care, people care, and the return of surplus.
All right. Did it... Either of you have take the PDC? Have you
You did?
Yeah, so I studied with Jeff Lawton.
You did?
Yeah, I started in 2019.
Oh, my, I'm with Reek. the royalty is in the house.
No, his approach to permaculture was phenomenal because it doesn't just focus on our temperate climate. So, you know, we go through in great detail in deserts and tundra and jungle and arid and Mediterranean climates and subtropic. So you get a really good understanding of how nature works. And I think that really, you know, improved it. Because I had read a lot about permaculture before I actually done the course and did the worked with Jeff. And we also did it at a time right when the pandemic hit. So he was really great about being available during that time. So like we actually got to interact with him quite a bit. And
was this online or just you personally?
It was all remote. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it was much harder. I mean, I would say like it was rewarding, but it was much challenging than anything I had done in university. So it was definitely
with a lot of hours.
A lot of hours. Yeah. And
it is. It's a deep course. It's It's fascinating.
Yeah.
So I know. For anybody who said, wait, they're talking permaculture? What in the world? That is a very, very, very broad term. Mm. And there is so much under that umbrella of the title permaculture. I mean, you're talking about soil regeneration. You're talking about climate, microclimates, and the hugel beds, and swales, and animal husbandry, and all of that. So, what did you end up having to do first on your part? For folks who don't know, when you take like a permaculture course, you tend to want to look at your own property, see what the first quote unquote problem is that needs to be solved, and then create a solution for it. You guys looked at yours, what was that?
Water capture.
Absolutely. Right? Water capture. Very first thing is just to pay attention to how the water flows in the property and make sure that it stays on the property. So that's the first thing you always assess in a permaculture design. And as you were saying, like it's so encompassing. It's because it's a design science. It's not necessarily like a style of farming or a style of something. It's a design science. So it's about taking components and combining them in different ways to, you know, to enhance nature, to speed it up, and to, you know, just take over the job that nature was doing already, and to make it go faster. Because you know, nature doesn't need us to succeed. You know, but that's kind of our niche. Is we believe that our niche is
Well, yeah. Sorry, interrupting.
No,
just
that's right.
to observe nature and mimic what it's.
Yeah, because nobody has to tend to the forest. It kind of does its own thing. It seems to be pretty healthy at times, doesn't it?
That's right.
Yeah.
When you say water was an issue, so we'll hit on that one first, water. And only because I have a very familiar story that I can throw off air real quickly, I think. We needed to capture water on my house. I told you originally that my house was, the whole landscape of it was just hard pack.
Yeah.
And so as we were doing lasagna gardening and all this and trying to build up our soil, we eventually ran into a problem where water from the road, since it was crowned, was flowing into our house. Literally, it would come off the crown of the road and this flow right and hit my basement wall and then just flood my basement. Mm. So we said, okay, we have a couple of options. We can either do something at the house level, like dig a trench or something and a French drain and try to run it off, or we can use it. And so what we did was we dug these mini hugel beds and planted blueberries in them. So as the water would come off, it would hit the first hugel bed, and we built cut a little swale in front of it so it would capture the water. And it was tipped. We made it just slightly off angle so that it would hit the next bed. All the overflow would hit the next bed. And so we had five or six of these mini hugel beds, which we had built, and captured all that water. And so now all of the blueberry plants there are self-watering and self-feeding. Awesome. Yeah, and it solved the problem in my basement for the most part. I didn't have to worry about what to do with all that gallons and gallons of water.
That's
pouring
excellent,
in there.
Yeah.
So what did you have to do? What was the water problem on your place?
So one of the attractions of our place was that it had a nice hill. So like, you know, we're looking for places that have all kinds of different microclimates. So like we had a hill, so a lot of our water was running right off the hill down our driveway, making it a you know, a lagoon. A
very familiar story.
Yep.
And you know, the first thing we did is we put in a quite a deep swale, actually, right at the key line, right in that area. And, you know, we didn't want to build like a dam. It's not that big of a hill.
Yeah.
But we did capture all the water there, and it dried up all the area down the driveway. But right in front of the swale, it created an amazing opportunity for growth. So, like,
put a pin in that thought, all Ethan. Right. Woo! Time to break out the Pez. We gotta pay some bills. Oh my gosh! We have Ethan and Amy Sager from Again and Again Farmstead in Tamworth in the house, talking permaculture, otherwise gardening. For those of you, kind of on a simpler term, for those of you who don't know what permaculture is, you are listening to NH Unscripted. I am your host without the pajamas, Ray Dudley. We are coming to you from the McHale's Navy-like digs of the WKXL studios in Concord. 1450 AM, 103.9 FM, Concord. 101.9 FM in Manchester. And nhtalkradio.com is our URL. We're coming back. We got a lot to talk about. On Cripple Creek. Oh my gosh, I love Creedence Clearwater Revival. You are listening to NH Unscripted. I am your so happy to be out of bed host, Ray Dudley, and we are coming to you from the YMCA-like digs of the WKXL studios. I can practically smell the chlorine from the pool right from here. You are probably capturing us on 1450 AM or 103.9 FM, Concord. 101.9 FM for the beautiful, beautiful, beautiful souls in Manchester. And for those of you who have no idea what a radio is, we do have a URL. It's nhtalkradio.com. And we are talking permaculture. I know, you just gasped. But hang on. We got deep things to talk about in-house. Ethan and Amy Sager from Again and Again Farmstead in Tamworth. Let's talk about soil regeneration. What in the world, for those people who just fell off their chair, what are we talking about? This is radio.
Yeah. Soil regeneration. So
there you go.
Yeah, so we're talking about life in the soil and the capacity for soil to grow plants. And, you know, it's in New Hampshire has pretty terrible soil overall, you know, unless you live on one of the
Merrimack
River or some area that has a nice silt capture. But most of New Hampshire is sand and gravel, and we're combating nutrient leaching. You know, you might notice if you're a gardener, you have to fertilize multiple times a year because that water is just running right through that sand.
Yeah.
So the trick is, how do you keep the water to run, you know, slow down the water? You know, it's all about slowing down the water. And how do you? And once you do that, you'll start to see improvements in the quantity of life. And the quantity of life is what dictates how good your plants grow, or how green the leaves are, how sweet the carrot tastes. So there's quite a bit of you know, permaculture techniques you can use to increase that soil life. And I think, you know, coming under the garden season, that's a pretty important thing to think about.
So did you have to take like samples of your soil from various places on your property to kind of break it down and find out what it did need or what it could use, like additives? And then how did you change that?
Absolutely. So the first thing you do is take a soil sample just to see where you're at.
Yep.
And you know, it's most likely going to be acidic here.
Yeah.
And it's going to tell you how much nitrogen, how much phosphorus, how much potash, how many minerals you have in the soil. And it gives you a kind of good place to start in terms of nutrients. But again, a lot of those things don't even matter if you don't have life in the soil to convert those nutrients into plant food. So
yeah,
as we know, plants, you know, they turn energy in the sun using chlorophyll into sugars. And those sugars go down into the roots and all those microorganisms. It's like Wall Street, you know, they're competing for those sugars.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the more soil life there is, the more competition there is for sugars, and the less sugars the plant has to produce. So one of the big light bulb moments for me was that you can grow partial shade plants or full sun shade or plants in partial shade if you have enough soil life, because they have to work less, you know, they need less sun,
yeah,
mm-hmm, to get the nutrients it needs from the soil. So
when we're talking soil life? Are we talking like mycelium? Are we talking worms? What do you consider to be decent soil life?
It's going to be bacteria, soil life, amoebas, like worms, anything that we can see and can't see, nematodes, good nematodes. You're going to have...
I'd say mycelium.
Yeah, mycelium, definitely. Yeah.
So let's talk about how you get. You can't just go down the store and get a bag of mycelium and throw it on your property. So if you're talking to someone, let's say, who's starting a garden this year and their soil's nasty.
Yeah.
I was going to use a different word, but what do you suggest that they look to do?
The easiest way to introduce soil life is to work with worm castings, to work with worms. So like having upping your compost game to include vermicast. There's a lot of systems out there available that can bring worms into your garden. And you can do this naturally and let nature, you know, attract worms as long as you're like mulching and you fix the water, you know, the aeration, and you introduced air and you've fixed your water problems so that the conditions are right for worms to want to live there. So like you'll see that naturally, but you can speed that up using vermicast techniques. And that's where I'd recommend people starting. But for our farm ourselves, we've actually gone further and we've gotten deep into Korean natural farming techniques. And that is all about what they're doing over in Korea right now is amazing about how they're growing microorganisms in unique ways, you know, taking indigenous the way they're doing it is they're going out into the woods and grabbing leaf mold, which we have tons of here.
Yep.
And we can culture that and brew that in such a way that it multiplies with the right temperature and the right amount of sugar. And by sugar, I mean boiled potatoes crushed up with leaf mold. You know, we'll brew microorganisms, and you can just simply water that into your soil before it makes it all real fluffy, and then you can plant right into that. So there's multiple ways to do it. The easiest one is to start with worm castings. Understand that the gut biome of a worm contains all the bacteria and enzymes that naturally trigger a hormone growth reaction in a plant. So that's nature's fertilizer. So I would start attracting worms there. I would start using worm, including worms in your compost routine. And getting all that life, because that's the fastest way to do it.
Yeah. My wife and I, when we built our garden beds and we're creating soil there, one of the things we had done to help out the worms, we put in these little like worm hotels where we bought like 4-inch PVC, drilled holes into it, drove it down into the middle of the bed, and then we would throw our compost in there and let the worms kind of work their way over and eat. And of course, they aerate the soil as well as they're kind of wiggling out through the garden beds and stuff.
Yeah, those are awesome.
Yeah, thanks. When you said vermicast, and that might be a term which...
Sure.
Yeah, so what are we talking? What is that?
Vermiculture is just the name for worm farm. So worm casts are worm manure. So it's the product of them eating your compost or your food scraps, worm chow, you know, however you get into the game. That they convert that organic matter into manure, and that manure is rich in those bacteria and enzymes that stimulate plant growth. And we actually take that a step further, and you can apply the castings right to the plant, you know, and see results. But if you have a large farm, it's not really practical. So if you're looking at like a half acre or an acre, like where you're trying to grow a serious amount to sustain your family or to farm like we are. We're brewing these. We're taking these worm castings, and we're brewing it in a compost tea. So we're multiplying those overnight, and then spraying those onto the soil. So we have
brilliant.
It's part of our fertilizer program on our farm.
My wife is so jealous.
Yeah. brewing worm tea.
We brew worm tea, and that's an important thing. And we brew enough in that we actually bottle some of that off, and we sell it at our farmer's market too. So. All the things we do on our farm, we try to make extra. So like the return of surplus, permaculture ethic is a big part of what are we doing. So, you know, that whole going back to that whole like community resilience thing and that permaculture is we're trying to just enable it. So like everything we do in our farm, we're conscious about like how can we enable people to do this rather than like telling them how to farm this way or to garden this way.
Yeah.
We're just making these things available and being a resource, hoping that people ask us how to use it and making it easy for them to grow and to multiply these things on their own, because it's not rocket science. It's right. just, you know.
But it
just,
can seem you know, like it. I mean,
it can
when
seem
you start,
like it, right.
Yeah, when you start talking permaculture and trying to change your soil over and all this, most people just know, I'm going to go down to Agway, I'm going to buy a bag of, you know, bone meal or something, or, you know, and right. throw it on my garden. They have no idea what you really, and they have no idea that their soil actually needs to be a living thing, and that it, the less inputs you need, the better your soil pretty much can be, you know. Yeah.
And often people come to us with questions, because we encourage people to ask us gardening questions, because we, you know, the more food the community has, like, no community's ever died with a surplus of food, you know.
Huh.
So, like, we're trying to get everyone to grow.
Yeah.
And the most common thing in New Hampshire is, like, I'm applying fertilizer, but it doesn't appear to be working.
Yeah.
And that's because there's no soil life. Like, you can throw any amount of nitrogen down, any amount of potash down, and it doesn't matter. That stuff will just wash out with the rain through our sandy soil unless you have life there to digest it fast. So life is the number one. I recommend everyone gardening this year to just think about how much life is in my soil, like, and what can I do to increase that? And there is a lot you can do to increase that.
So it's fascinating when you have really good soil and you pull some up and then you see all these white, like, fibrous things going through the mycelium and stuff. Most people think, oh, my soil's bad.
Yeah.
It's rotten. It's got this fibrous stuff in it. They don't realize how important a lot of that life is to your garden.
And we don't know everything about it. You know, we don't know.
Yeah, good point.
I couldn't tell you every name of every soil life, because we only know, like, slightly, you know, just a few of them. And so, like, we just have to work assuming that you're building that life, you know, knowing that having faith in nature, you know.
Put a pin in that one. Dang, two segments stuck. I can't believe it. Mama told me not to come. Well, but we did it anyway. And here we are, NH Unscripted. I am your three-dog loving knight, Ray Dudley. We are coming to you from the digs of the WKXL studios, deep in the bunkers of Concord, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM, 101.9 FM in Manchester. NHTalkRadio.com is our URL. Guess what we're talking about next? Chickens, ducks, and sheeps. We'll be right back. Whew, that spam sandwich is not going to sit good with me later, but hey, it's what we do sometimes around here. You are listening to NH Unscripted. I am your pajama-wearing host, Ray Dudley. We are coming to you from the Taj Mahal-like digs of the WKXL Studios in Concord, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM, 101.9 FM for the blessed souls in Manchester. NHTalkRadio.com is our URL, and let me just take a moment to tell you about that. You can go out there. There's a button where you can listen live. You can also find the archives of all of this program, plus the other great shows that are here at the studio. We won't get into all of them right now, but the archives are out there, hours and hours and hours. That's NHTalkRadio.com. In-house, Ethan and Amy Sager from Again and Again Farmstead in Tamworth. And now we need to talk about animals, the cute ones, all the ones everyone loves, the little chickens and the ducks and the sheep. Why do you have them on your property?
Why do we have them?
Yes, please.
Well, they bring a lot of fertility.
Yes, they do.
So I don't know if we want to start with the birds, the chickens and the ducks.
Yeah, I'm in the camp that you simply cannot have a thriving ecosystem without birds. Like, birds are absolutely essential. And whether you raise them yourselves with chickens or with ducks or turkeys or quails, you know, that's one option. Or you could just simply attract wild birds and leverage nature on how to do that. You know, there's lots
Why do you think they're so important? What are they adding?
Birds add...
besides the fact that my chickens destroy my garden, just putting that out there.
They can be very destructive.
Huh.
Yeah.
You're a little late, thanks.
Well, what they're doing is creating disturbance.
Yes.
So that out of that disturbance, you'll see growth. You know, so that's the chickens great. You know, a lot of people get chickens for eggs, and in our area, we always see, like, two-year-old chickens going up for sale because they're no longer use, and we're always like, no, those are the workers. Like, the real power of them is their is their disturbance, their mm-hmm. fertility, you know.
Yeah.
So that their manure is just an amazing source of fertility, and the pest control also, you know, it's depending on how good they're eating, the manure is going to be a higher quality.
Mm. Yeah.
And you can rotate them, you can move them around, and I always tell a story that a lot of the early explorers of North America, when they came over, were actually you don't hear much about them, but they were the botanists. You know, they were the people that were looking for like exotic plants to take back because that's where all the big money was back then.
Mm.
And with nobility, and they wanted to, you know, rare plants was a big thing in Europe. So these guys have journals they've left behind, and almost all of them talk about these giant bird migrations in North America, and they talk about how times it would be black as night when these migrations fly over. And you know, we had that amazing savanna out in the Midwest where that oak hickory savanna, the grasslands where the buffalo thrive, those big migrations were just, you know, dropping that manure
mm-hmm.
over those savannas, bringing fertility to the land everywhere in North America. And you know, you can look back and see programs where people were rewarded for, like, you know, because you know, as we developed, they were landing in people's crops, and you know, they were getting money for hunting them and reducing those populations. So we don't have that giant bird population that was originally here when this place was wild. So you can kind of learn from that, and you can say, well, if nature was leveraging birds in such a way, you know, without us, yeah. you know. We have birds. We have the chicken. You know, we have the duck, and we can use that same, you know, fertility to build pasture, to, you know, to bring life where life wasn't.
Yeah. So we're all familiar with what the purpose of chickens and the importance of mm-hmm. them, because we love their eggs. We have them every day, or in some of our cases more than that. But anyway, I digress. Why ducks? What's happening there?
Ducks, well, another bird that creates disturbance and also has amazing manure. Do you want to talk about that, Ethan?
You can talk about it.
Well, it's water soluble, so you don't have to compost it. So we go ahead and use that right on our fruit trees, and it's.
Wait, you don't have to do something to that to make it, like, so it's not burning anything? Or
yeah, so that's the right. unique thing about a duck is their manure is water-soluble, available immediately to the plant. So, like, if you create a duck system where you're putting, like, a duck water, because when a duck goes and forages in the forest, they're putting their head under that mulch, and all that microbiology from the forest is going into their face, and they have to rinse it out in their duck bowl. And they're manuring, and then they're jumping in it and swimming and manuring it and making a big old mess.
I'm gonna cry.
It's super cute, yeah. But, you know, at the end of the day, we dump that right on the fruit tree and we move it to the next one. And you move it to the next one and you move it through all your perennials and you know, you let the duck move through the property. And what else are they good for?
Eggs.
They are good. Yeah, their eggs are quite delicious. But
they do eat a lot of slugs and stuff, don't they? And
all they that absolutely kind of stuff. Do. Yeah.
I had a few slugs that I needed to get rid of last year. But yeah. I got rid of my duck. Poor Pip. Dang it. No, I'm going to cry.
Well, so, we know where you can get some more.
Yeah. So how does that... correct me if I'm wrong. Doesn't Joel Salatin, doesn't he have this system where he lets the cows go through the field first because they eat the tall parts of the grass, then he lets, I guess, the sheep go through or whatever, and then the chickens and the ducks because they'll pick the bugs and everything. Is that true? So
That's
do you have
right.
a system like that going there?
We do with our sheep. Yeah, we have our chickens are, they have a mobile coop, so they do follow the sheep after they've been in their paddock, and they'll create disturbance and eat all the bugs and parasites and
they put that manure from the sheep into that surface
into that top soil.
You know, they're creating topsoil and they're adding their own bit to it, and then as long as you don't keep them there too long, you know, the soil can take it, you know. So we use sheep and chickens to build our silvopasture, and silvopasture is a forest system. It's a blend of pasture and forest to allows you to get, you know, agroforestry crops from it, as well as a sheep crop. And it's really essential. Birds and sheep working together, and they do get along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk some numbers for a minute before we get too far into the weeds. How big is your property? How many chickens, ducks, and sheep do you have there? And do you have other animals besides them? First off, how big is your property? Let me start there. I told you, I'll go down a million rabbit holes.
It's just a 5.25 acres. Yeah.
Just? Is it all farmed at this point?
It is, yeah.
It is?
Yeah.
So, okay. And the numbers, how many chickens you got? Ducks?
We've got 20 chickens,
it's about
right?
About 25 chickens, yeah.
Is it 25? Are you happy with that number?
And they're so cute. Chickens are so cute. They are so happy in the morning. When you open that door, whatever, you've got them in the mobile coop. But, you know, when we had ours and you open up that door, my God, you'd think they just like...
I know. It's
they're so happy.
They're so excited.
Oh, my God.
And they really... We were talking about how they really don't complain much either.
No. Yeah. And they... Oh, my gosh. And some of them really become fond of you. You know, they're like a pet. Oh, my... Don't get
me started. Come up with their own, like, vocabulary. They'll, like, you know, make different noises when you do different things for them. And
we had one Squawky that we called it Squawky because, well, she always seemed like everyone else was picking on her, and she'd like come to you and just start like crying to you about all the bullies in the pen were picking on her. Oh my God. How many ducks you got?
How many ducks do we have now?
18. Yeah.
18. 18.
Ethan's better with the numbers, clearly.
Yeah.
And how many sheep?
We have 10. 10
and
sheep.
Now you, why the sheep?
Why sheep? Oh gosh, what an awesome animal. I mean, we utilize their fiber.
You sell their wool, right? Their skeins
of wool?
We do.
We actually process wool on our farm.
In-house? You do that in-house?
We do, yeah. So, we're selling, fiber for creative projects, for spinners and...
Yeah, we haven't figured out a way to do a small-scale, like, spinning machine. Like, the cost of, I mean, any engineer out there listening wants to take that on. Like, but the cheapest way to, like, create a skein, the cheapest machine is, like, $20,000.
Yeah.
So, like, there's a huge jump between technology and farm scale. And that's, but we can take it all the way up to the roving stage on a
little mini,
our mini machines.
Yeah.
You know, and we're fortunate to live in an area that has a lot of spinners and a lot of fiber artists. So, it's been pretty cool to watch, you know, local fiber come in, because that's a human necessity. You know, it's just like food, just like what we're talking about. Permaculture is also about, you know, people care is the second ethic. Yeah. It's about our needs, like clothing is one of our needs. So, you know, we knew right from the beginning that we wanted to do something about that, and sheep was the obvious answer for that.
Yeah. Talk about the farm itself. Are you no-till gardeners? Are you raised bed gardeners? Are you how are you doing things out there?
No-till.
No-till.
And explain what that means for folks.
No-till just means building the soil over time without disturbance. So the chickens don't go into our market garden.
Can you hear that music?
Yeah.
3 blocks down. Oh, my God. Time to break out the peeps. Hang on, everybody. I'm heading for spam sandwiches. I don't know about anybody else. You are listening to NH Talk Radio. I am your blessed host, Ray Dudley. So glad to be here. I can't believe they pay me for this. We are coming to you from the monk-like conditions of the WKXL studios in Concord. 1450 AM, 103.9 FM. Those are folks who know what a radio is. 101.9 FM in Manchester, a URL which we happen to own. NHTalkRadio.com. In-house, Ethan and Amy Sager from Again and Again Farmstead in Tamworth. We're peeling their farm apart. Yeah, I got more questions for them. We'll be right back. They're playing our song. You are listening to NH Unscripted. I am your blessed host, Ray Dudley. We are coming to you from the not overly ostentatious digs of the WKXL studios in Concord. Whip out those transistor radios. Head on over to AM. You'll find us at 1450. Flip on over to the FM band, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM for the beautiful, beautiful, beautiful souls in Manchester. NHTalkRadio.com is our URL. This show comes to you every Wednesday and Friday morning at 9 a.m. Yeah, I know you're smiling. I know you're happy because we send out the love vibes. Speaking of that, we are talking about permaculture today. Gardening, for those who kind of don't know what permaculture is. But on a deeper level, in-house, Ethan and Amy Sager from the Again and Again Farmstead in Tamworth. Let's talk economics of permaculture. How is it? It seems like it'd be one of those things which could be expensive on one hand. What's the ROI here? Is it decent on what you guys do? First, I have no idea. I know you have microgreens out there for sale right now, but what is the return on investment for what you're doing out there?
It's been big.
Yeah. It's well, I'd say, you know, just
bigger than you expected or anticipated?
Yes.
I think so. I mean, I think just having a diverse line of products in addition to our microgreens and our market garden, I think we just we tend to think big and pretty broad. We love creating the growing supplies. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, our first when we first started out, you know, we were like, if we can just make this a nice, like, you know, sideline, and the abundance that we make, would be a value to the community, and we didn't want to go further than we define community as 15-mile radius, you know, so we knew that, you know, every year the abundance is going to grow in permaculture just by design, so we didn't expect the reception we got, and we also live in an amazing farming scene. You know, like Tamworth has one of the most thriving farming scenes I've encountered in my life, and everyone, you know, the community supports buying local, and that makes a huge difference. You
big,
know, like
that's big.
If you're farming and you don't have a community that is open to it, then you have a lot of work to do. You have a lot of work to do to get people to come over to see the light, so to speak. But we didn't have to do any of that. So like in Tamworth, people were just like, you know, welcoming. They loved seeing it. They loved hearing like all the different things we like to do, and
they're so supportive.
And we try to open source everything, so we don't, you know, keep trade secrets or anything like that. So like I said, part of our mission is just to enable. You know, like we don't want to tell everyone what to do. We just want to enable people to say like you can do this easily now. You know, that's kind of where we saw our niche. So. You know, service, open sourcing this knowledge and being available is a big thing. A lot of, you know, farmers can do if they're looking to lean into permaculture as more of a career. And it's the opposite of what a lot of people are taught. You know, a lot of people
Absolutely.
Are saying like, stay north, stay focused, stay on one thing. But if the focus is permaculture, then you're following those ethics and you can't do more than that. You can't do less than that. So that is the focus. That is what we're selling. And
so you stay away from monocrops, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you rotate them through and you're doing, I assume, companion planting and all of that stuff. So how are you doing that? You're doing it right in the ground? You don't have raised beds? You don't have?
No, we do. We just have beds, just 30-inch beds. You know, we use the L.A. Coleman's model from Maine, famous organic, new organic grower, writer. You know, we use for our market garden, you know, we consider that a main crop in permaculture. So we're pumping out, bulk.
Yeah.
You know, the more, the healthier our soil gets, the more it produces. And we're not going to compete with like someone that's aggressively growing like an organic production, but we're focusing on
flavor
and like hopefully quality and something different, you know, like we like
an heirloom.
Heirloom
veggies. Yep.
Like,
and all the.
What, like?
Heirloom veggies? Where do you start? Yeah, one of our favorites is an onion. We grew a lot for ourselves, and this year we should have enough abundance to share, but it's this beautiful onion that was grown in the north of France called a Rose de Roscoff. It's a pink onion that's sweet, but it's a storage onion, so it tastes as sweet as like a sweet onion that you'd buy in the store, but it's a storage one, so it keeps all winter long. And we're going to bring that out this year. And a lot of the stuff we are growing for ourselves and not producing enough to share, you know.
Ooh, you rat.
That's the challenge. <You rat. laughs>
we go heavy into Asian greens. So, like, we love making Indian and Korean food all the time. And we think that when you're busy and you only have, like, 20 minutes, like, Asian food is the answer. Like, you can get all kinds of, you know, they over centuries develop greens that were made to just be steamed and eaten. You know, so like we can eat, you know, we produce those greens, and we, as far as we know, you can't get them anywhere. So we do a lot of like Asian heirlooms, and we do
what are some peppers. Of the big things, you guys? So when you come, as the summertime hits and you're in full steam and rearing to go, what's like your number one products? I mean, surely not tomatoes and all that, right? You got to be doing other things than that, right?
It's mostly greens.
Yeah?
Mostly
really?
The leafy greens. Yeah.
Like the Asian greens are big, and microgreens, we also do that. Yeah, pretty potatoes.
we have a pretty good
people
potato
fight over
pollen.
Those. Yeah,
yeah, we love growing potatoes.
Yeah,
they're just fun to dig
awesome
up.
Awesome vegetable, I know.
Oh my gosh!
I mean, we were big gardeners for a long time before we got into permaculture. So we have, you know, we did a lot of variety searching, and then we found that there's varieties that aren't good for mass production. You know, so there's a game there trying to figure out like what is the best flavor versus the quantity. And you know, we're always going to go to flavor, you know?
Yeah. And because we're a young farm, we're sort of waiting for there to be abundance with our fruit trees and our berries.
Yeah. We had our first fruit last year. It was a big event, and that sold instantly. It's like these perennials we put early on in the system, when we were talking about what we do first, one of the things we did was just plant everything. So we cleared a lot of like sick forest that was infested with, you know, ash borer, and it was early succession, so it wasn't like a mature forest, and there's also a lot of forest around us, so like we felt that we could convert that into a forest that with more productive species.
So
we kept everything on the site, and we turned it into biochar, used it for firewood.
Brilliant.
So a lot of that, all that slash was just processed into biochar, and that was a huge help. And like, you know, biochar in itself can be a whole radio show, but it's just a pure carbon that does a number of things in the soil. It reduces water nutrient leaching, so that we talked about earlier.
Yep.
Like biochar will stop that, and it'll reduce it, and it'll increase the cation exchange capacity of it, so that you have more, you don't have to fertilize as much. And it also provides food and organic matter for all those microorganisms. It's like putting in a microorganism high rise,
because
the surface area of that biochar is important. So anywhere where we've used that has been like exponentially growth.
I have to look into that.
Yeah, and we do sell it. And we, you know, everything we do, we make available.
Yeah.
And then, it's an also really good asset for making pasture as well. Biochar. Yeah.
We have been so fortunate out on my little half acre micro homestead out there. We probably have 15 different varieties of berries, cranberry, mulberry, elderberry, raspberry, blackberry, blueberry, goji berries. We have currants. We have all kinds of stuff in this little slot. And our theory is if it's going to be grown there, it needs to have a purpose. It can't just be something like, my wife has this whole herb bed out there, all kinds of, and she makes soaps and oils and all this stuff. It all has to come back in somehow. It has to be functional. It's either attracting bees or dragonflies or something out there. It has to have a purpose. We've espaliered all of our fruit trees, so we now have Asian pears and apples and peaches, and so
that's so cool.
Thanks, man. It's been a ball. I mean, once you start, it's addictive.
It really is. It absolutely is.
It's crazy. And she's crying because we don't have chickens anymore. Oh my god. But you know, we run this, this is kind of a sidebar here, but the chickens, we love to let them free range, because we're big into giving them, letting them do their thing, and not wanting to feed them. I mean, it defeats the purpose. I got to go to Agway and buy feed for chickens just so I can get an egg out of, you know. So we, and of course, the quality of the eggs is so much better when they free range.
Yeah.
But they destroy our gardens.
Yes.
Those little pesky guys.
Do.
Yeah, they're so happy just out there.
One of the wonders of the modern world is electric fencing.
Yeah, ours are contained free range, not only to protect them from predators.
Yeah, we move around, but they are contained.
They are contained. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Tamworth. It's out in Tamworth, on the way, I might add, to Zeb's in North Conway. Two places I love to be at. In-house today, talking permaculture, Ethan and Amy Sager. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Here.
It's fun.
Yeah. URL, give me the URL once again.
It's againfarmstead.com.
Huh, because it's Again and Again Farmstead out there in Tamworth.
We also have a newsletter that's gained a huge steam, you know, across the country. So, like, feel free to sign up. We share open source everything, tips, and we tell what we're growing and what we're up to up there. And
talk about the farm, the sheep, the
yeah.
All right.
And birds. It's free.
Well, there you go. And you might as well face it. You're addicted to love. And that means NH Unscripted. I am your happy host, Ray Dudley. We are coming to you from the monk-like conditions of the WKXL studios in Concord, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM, 101.9 FM in Manchester, nhtalkradio.com. Again and Again Farmstead in Tamworth. Oh, man, we had so many places we could go. Oh, well, have to have you back.